Hi, this is Brian Husky. I play Reggie in the X-Files season 11, and you are listening to X-Cast.
Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and this is the beginning of our coverage of episode 4 of season 11, The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat, Darren Morgan's comedy episode. And I'm joined by, I was going to say a comedian then, but I don't know. I mean, you're a funny guy, Carl Sweeney, but, you know, am I stretching it with comedian, really?
Possibly, but it's good to be back anyway, Tony freaking Black. It's always good to talk to you.
I'm Tony freaking Black, damn it! There's going to be a lot of that in this episode, I suspect.
Yeah.
A lot of these moments. Because today, in this first episode, we're talking about Agent Foxy and Agent Skulls.
Skulls.
Good old Skulls, yeah. in the Lost Art of Forehead Sweat. But before we do, Carl, let's have some first reactions. You've just freshly watched this episode. So what did you think?
I did enjoy it. I think it's going to be an interesting one to see where, like, the needle falls on this one, where, like, the dust settles, you know. Because I think my immediate response is probably it's minor Darren Morgan. I don't know. Which, you know, minor Darren Morgan is still a good thing to have. But I felt like there was a mix of real, like, strong stuff, very hilarious moments, and then maybe a couple of things that just on first viewing, maybe a couple of rough spots that I don't think exist in, like, his finest work, which I think is Jose Chung and Clyde Bruckman. But having said that, I mean, I think it continues a nice little run that the series is on, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And judging by some of the reaction I've been reading in the X-Files basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group, which, of course, you're all members of, but if you're not, get in there. It's a special group. Judging by the some of the early reaction, it's been a lot more polarised than I honestly expected, you know, certainly for a Darren Morgan episode and certainly for this, because I got to be honest, I did really enjoy it. I think it was funny. I agree with you that I don't think it's top-tier classic Darren Morgan, but then I don't think he's ever done anything particularly bad, really. So yeah. I wouldn't say this is bad at all. I would say this is... I think it's too early to judge whether this is my favourite episode. I think I enjoyed this the most of all of them so far. Whether it's the best, critically, I don't know. The jury's still out on that one. But I think there was a lot of really interesting stuff he wanted to do with this and say. And I think it's a... And we you know, we will get into this, but I think it's a bit of a culmination in a way of everything he's done almost over the last 25 years. So, I did really enjoy it. And I am surprised that people seem to be really polarised on it. I mean, maybe I'm just being naive.
Well, I mean, when I went to bed last night, I was just seeing loads of critics, you know, general TV critics, talking about how great this episode was. And so I kind of was expecting to see the episode and see the kind of fan reaction reflect that. And I've only had a very quick chance to look at it, but like what the fans are saying. But I suppose it doesn't surprise me in the sense that it's so self-referential. And it's so kind of wacky and distinctive that I can kind of see why this would be an acquired taste for people, you know. And I suppose the other thing, which we may well come on to talk about another time, is like how overtly political this episode is. You know, it's kind of conceived as being, isn't it? So
yeah.
I wonder if that's what's kind of rubbing people the wrong way to an extent.
Maybe. I think there is, to some extent, part of the issue is that Darren Morgan... historically has been a lot more subtle with his allegory or his subtext and things like that, whereas, you know, a lot of it he's quite on the nose with this, and I think that's where there are some criticisms. I think there are some things to pick out where he pushes it a bit, I'd say, but I think I think people maybe on first look at it, at the reaction, maybe getting a bit hung up on these little details and maybe forgot to kind of just enjoy it for what it is. And that might be something that comes in a rewatch. It might not be something that comes at all. You know, it's comedy. It's subjective. You know, one person can love a Darren Morgan episode. Somebody else might hate it. You know, although I don't know if there are many people I've ever met who didn't like his comedy episodes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's very subjective. So, you know, not everyone's going to go for it. And I think some of the criticism that's been coming out that I've looked at, it's been fair. You know, it's been pretty rationed, you know, and pretty well thought out.
Yeah, I would agree from the little I've seen so far. I think it's one of those things where I'd find this very hard one to quantify. If we were doing like the marks out of 10 thing, like right now, I'm really not sure where I'd go. I probably need to see it again. But I felt like, I think a lot of the time with Darren Morgan episodes, a lot of like the one-liners kind of pass me by on first viewing, you know, and they do reward repeat viewing. So it may be that like there were some stretches of the episode where I wasn't laughing quite as frequently. Whereas like my memory of watching like Clyde Bruckman and Jose Chung for the first time is like laughing consistently all the way through. But it may be that going back to it, I'd find there are things that kind of just sailed past me on first viewing, you know. And I think part of it, I mean, a lot of the episode takes place in this parking garage, doesn't it? And I'm not sure if that's the most visually distinctive location. I felt like it was the graveyard sequence in Weremonster, I thought, was kind of a similar Shaggy Dog type, you know, sequence, but was in a much more interesting setting. So, yeah, I suppose the issues I have are relatively minor. I am positive about this episode, though, overall. I think maybe Glenn Morgan's episode is my favourite thus far.
Yeah, it's like you say, it's going to take a little bit of a little bit of going back and looking at it a bit more in more detail, because there's a lot in here. There's a lot of gags, there's a lot of sight gags, there's a lot of visual references, there's a lot of things that people will have picked up on, but will have missed people by, you know, passed people by, you know, which might enrich the experience. So it's going to reward repeat viewings, which people will absolutely do, obviously. This is the X-Files. But I suppose going on to our topic, Foxy and Skulls, because we're no longer calling them Mulder and Scully, not anymore. Sorry, how these two are portrayed, and obviously with the Darren Morgan episodes, they are Mulder and Scully, the characters we know and love, but they are from the Darren Morgan perspective, and the Darren Morgan perspective is, I've described it many times, it's like a little pocket universe in which it is recognisable, but at the same time it's wackier, it's goofier. It allows David Duchovny to play broad comedy, which he very much enjoys, and he always did. And Gillian Anderson really enjoys the deadpan a lot more when she does these kind of things. So I think they were good fun in this, and I need to go back and watch Weremonster again. And I watched it recently, but I need to watch it again. I kind of feel they were, I think Duchovny was having more fun in this one.
Yeah, well, I feel like, I mean, I've criticised them both a little bit on this podcast before for season 10, because I felt like it, I'm repeating myself, but I felt it varied a bit episode to episode how effective their performances were. But I thought in Weremonster, Morgan got good performances out of both of them. But yet, in season 11, I felt basically from scene 1, episode 1, they were both kind of much more on form, and it's kind of been sustained so far, which is really good to see. But yeah, Duchovny, I thought, had some excellent like line readings here. You know, real good laugh out loud stuff. And so did Anderson, you know. I think they both did really well with this material. But yeah, it's interesting what you say about like the pocket universe thing, because it kind of has developed, though, hasn't it? Because I know he's always, Morgan's had this tendency to make Mulder, you know, this kind of ridiculous figure. But like, I think in the first couple of Morgan episodes in the original series, it was much more, it was done in a way where Mulder was still in character. It's just that, you know, the episode itself was poking fun at him. Whereas when you have an episode like this where it starts with, I mean, he's wearing a Sasquatch costume, isn't he?
Yeah. He's, out-squatching.
Out-squatching, yeah. just stretching it as far as he possibly can, isn't he? And I think that's one thing that's kind of changed since, you know, he was first let loose on the X-Files, Morgan.
I think it probably was, thinking back as you say this, I think you're right, and I probably war for the
cockroach.
Yeah, that one. I say coprophages, but I hear it half a dozen different ones. It was, I think it was that one where Morgan was the one that Morgan started to play a lot more of that with Mulder. I think Humbug, like you say, you had like him standing on the step. you know, with the imagine going through your whole life looking like that. And then Clyde Brookman was, you know, it wasn't as pronounced. But then I think, yeah, the cockroach is one. And then especially Jose Chung with all the kind of stuff. You know, that kind of, that was where it really took off. And obviously that, you know, after that, you didn't have Darren Morgan scripts. But in a lot of the comedy episodes, you don't have to look at Bad Blood, you know, which was a Darren Morgan episode in all but, you know, name, really, I suppose. Duchovny, whenever they do comedy, Duchovny is amping up that kind of goofy, you know, completely screwball angle that he really enjoys doing alongside the deadpan, you know, because to be fair, he gets to do deadpan anyway. You know, he gets to do that in the normal episodes, really, as Mulder, even some of the serious ones, whereas here he gets to really let loose and be zany, and he loves it. It's like the bit at the end where he's like, no, it's not true, it collapse. That stuff.
Yeah, and I liked the moment before that when they're in the car, you know, and he's kind of bobbing around on the back seat like he's some kind of hound or something.
And Gillian's just driving like she's in like a 50s, like, just driving, rum. It's funny.
Yeah, but I mean, do you detect kind of that Morgan has kind of softened to the character of Mulder? Because that's kind of how it seems to me. So, like, maybe if in those first few episodes he wrote, there's this kind of outsider's view of Mulder. Like, I mean, you get it as well in Clyde Brookman when the detectives are talking about this guy's coming in and blah, 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 blah. And it turns out not to be Mulder they're talking about. It's the stupendous Yappy. But I think I sort of detect it here and in Were Monster that Morgan's kind of channeling himself through Mulder much more these days, you know. So, I mean, one aspect I really liked about Were Monster. In a way, it's kind of uncomfortable viewing, but I felt like, you know, you're sort of watching Darren Morgan kind of flagellate himself with this midlife crisis that Mulder's going through, you know.
And, I think that's true, actually. That's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think you sort of see aspects of Morgan in Reggie and also in Mulder. It's kind of also that guy in the teaser who it starts the episode, direct to camera, where he's saying, I'm not crazy, the world's gone crazy. I thought that kind of summed up what he was driving at.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just feel like Morgan kind of has grown fonder. Maybe he's mellowed, you know. And I think maybe the Darren Morgan of today is maybe, I don't know, maybe he's made his peace with the X-Files, or he's kind of, maybe he's kind of got this nostalgia that comes out in these episodes, you know, for the series. And I think he's kind of grown, or he's changed, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think he has sort of changed his attack with Mulder, because, you know, it was always very much that Mulder was this sort of, you know, tall, handsome, white male hero figure that he just loved to just pick apart and make look stupid. And, you know, it was quite often Scully was the one who was the brains of the outfit. Mulder was just the goofball, you know, he was just trailing along in a shadow half the time. Scully was the one with all, you know, because if you look at most of Darren Morgan's episodes, they're not actually, quite often the supernatural element is either debunked or it's not quite, you know, it's not taken seriously. You don't get, you know, it's very much that if there is something weird going on out there, Morgan's less interested in that than he is about sending it all up. And ultimately sending up the idea that Mulder is always right. You know, in these episodes, he's just a doofus, you know, he just, and that's why I think you could say the softening element is the fact that, you know, this episode's all about perception of truth. It's all about perception of reality. It's about the subjective nature of truth. And the very fact at the end, an alien gives Mulder a book that says, these are all the answers. This is everything, and in such a nonchalant way as to say, we don't care about you lot, but anyway, here's the truth. You know, enjoy yourselves. We just don't want to see you again. And then he can't cope with it. Mulder's part of it is this ego. When you see him go, I'm fucked, Mulder. You don't know who I am. You know, but it's the ego of that he enjoys being this person seeking the truth and all this, having his ex on his window and going to these secret rendezvous. And then when everything's resolved in a book, he's like, no, she's too easy. So I think, but I think that's Morgan's way of sort of going, okay, this is, let's give him what he wants, because the show's never going to do that. You know, Chris Carter's never going to give him that. So I think Morgan wanted to.
Yeah. Well, I think those last few sequences were fascinating, really. And for a few reasons, but it kind of comes back to something I know you said in the past, you know, that The X-Files maybe can't have or shouldn't have this kind of proper ending, you know. So what you see here, even though there's stuff in those final sequences that like engenders this really like nostalgic feeling that I thought was quite powerful, you know, because I think sometimes people like knock nostalgia, but it does have a place, I think. So like, I can't remember exactly what Reggie said, but it's something about, he said something about the X-Files, didn't he, in that last scene with the UFO. But what you see is that, you know, the ending of the X-Files, getting all the answers, getting to the truth, is going to kind of be this tragedy for Mulder, isn't it? Because once you strip away his quest, you know, what's left?
What's he got left, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of reminded me of, like, you know, for all the flack Chris Carter took for splitting them up at the outset of season 10, and I think he could like handled it dramatically better. But the element of it that really did ring true is that if you sort of cast Mulder adrift, where he's kind of rudderless, you know, it doesn't make sense that he struggles with things.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes all the way back to Little Green Men, which I thought was so brilliant, the way it picked up from Erlenmeyer Flask. With, you know, he ends the Erlenmeyer Flask on this triumphant note, like defiance, and then you pick up a few months later and he's kind of, I don't know, he's kind of lost, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there's a really interesting tension in that last scene with the, like, the Trump alien, where it's kind of this triumph, and yet it's not, you know? And then also, of course, the scene between the two of them on the sofa at the end.
Yeah, and there's a bittersweetness to the, you know, the answers and the truth and that kind of thing. But it's, you know, it's sending up the very idea of, you know, of subjective reality and the fact that ultimately what Scully says to him is that, I want to remember, you know, and that to me, she was speaking for everybody there. That was the audience communicating, and Darren Morgan as well, communicating through her and saying, you know, nostalgia does have its place. You're absolutely right. We want to remember how it was. You know, we want to remember the good days. You know, I mean, this, if anything pretty much concludes, you know, proves that this is the end. It was this episode. This episode had goodbye written all over it in so many ways. You know, it was very much a coded, get ready, because this is it. This is the end, okay? Yeah. And I've said before, you could have ended it. I said in my review, you could have ended the show on that scene, I think. Quite honestly, with them two sitting on the sofa saying, you know, let's remember the past, pan up, you know, pull up to the stars. I can't imagine Chris Carter's going to give us a more satisfying ending than that, if I'm honest. I really don't.
Yeah, it seems somewhat dubious, doesn't it, when he's talking about ending on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, you're right. I think in that, depending on how the final six episodes go, you've got quite a nice jumping off point there at the end of episode 4, haven't you? Which, kind of like when we talk to Sarah, she talks about, oh, I always stop rewatching when I get to Jesuit at the end of season 7. It's kind of like somewhat akin to that, isn't it? But in terms of what Morgan was kind of driving at there, that's interesting, because I just very quickly clicked on like an interview with him earlier, and he is saying, like, somebody asked him what the meaning is of that final exchange, and he didn't really want to answer it. He sort of says it could mean several things, and he wanted to preserve the ambiguity. But like on my first watch, I took it as a comment on the show, you know, and I'm wondering if it hints at, you sort of detect this level of like ambivalence from Morgan about whether reviving the X-Files was such a good idea at times, you know. So I think it plays into In Weremonster when Mulder's like, I thought it'd be great to come back to work, but, you know, is it really? he's kind of having his cake and eating it here, though, isn't he? Because, yeah, it sort of has this elegiac feel, doesn't it? And at the same time, what he's done is kind of a very pointed attack, really, on the US political, well, the president, basically, and the US political climate. So it's dealing with timely themes in a manner which is kind of reflective and nostalgic, etc., etc. I mean, I probably agree with what you're saying. It looks like it's the end, doesn't it? Having said that, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I was very, like, effusive about Glenn Morgan's episode, because I felt, wow, that's showing how you do the X-Files in the modern day, you know, that's the way to do new X-Files. So, but I think you're right, Morgan. This episode has come along anyway at a time when it looks like the series, as we know it, is coming to some sort of conclusion, whether it's a satisfying one.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of the signs are pointing to that, really. And we'll get into this as we go through our coverage of The Lost Art of Four Head Sweat. Before I leave, though, I've got to point out what I think is the best exchange in the episode. And it's between Mulder and Scully.
Yeah.
And it's the moment where Mulder is rifling through his VHS tapes, and he's looking for the lost Twilight Zone episode. And Scully says to him, Maybe he just confused it with an episode of The Outer Limits. And he went, confuse the Twilight Zone with The Outer Limits? Do you even know me? That.
Yeah.
I was howling with laughter.
That was a brilliant moment, wasn't it? And of course,
fantastic.
Yeah. And the great thing is that Scully ultimately was right. I mean, it wasn't even The Outer Limits. It was The Dusky Realm.
The Dusky Realm. You know? It was just, to me, that was just that wonderful a wonderful kind of moment that encapsulates a relationship, in that is something that a wife would say to a husband who's obsessive over something and say, well, maybe you've just got it mixed up. And he's like, what? No! Like that, and so that was beautiful, bit of realism for me.
You're speaking from some personal level, are you, Tony? You've got some...
Without question. Absolutely.
I'll tell you what I loved was the image of young Fox Mulder on the sofa watching this first Twilight Zone episode.
With his head! With his head! That was brilliant.
Yeah, and I've seen this interview with Morgan. He says what he was aiming at. I just thought it was a brilliantly funny sight, you know, yeah, sight really gag. Was. But he said, like, you know, when you think back to what you did as a kid, you sort of think, like, why did I do that? And you sort of bring in your, like, adult sensibilities to it. But, like, in reality, the answer is that you were a kid, you're not mature, you know. That's why you do all these ridiculous things. But, yeah, that's a sight never to be... Once seen, never forgotten, I would guess.
It really is. It's like those GIF... Are they called GIF gaff? That where you can splice on people's heads into people dancing and things like that. And it's... I think it's called GIF gaff or something. It's just, yeah, wonderful. So, yeah, Foxy and Skulls did the business this episode. They were great, and we're going to continue our discussion about the Lost Art of Forehead Sweat, and in next episode we're going to get into much more about Reggie something and Dr. Thaddeus They as well. To the two main guest characters. Before we go, I'd also like to just briefly thank our first patrons of the XCast who kindly donated after we launched our brand new Patreon, which you can find details at www.patreon.com/thexcast. So a big thanks to our teammate and friend Andrew Brooker, Kurt North, and Kathy Glinsky. You are awesome. Thank you so much for supporting our show, and we look forward to getting you involved in all the special Patreon stuff. So check out our page for more details. So until then, thanks for listening, and always remember, trust no one.